Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
My son always detested dolls and plushies. Ever since he was an infant, I tried to buy him teddy bears and other fluffy creatures to keep him company at night, but he'd always end up tossing them aside, never to pick them up again. He was more of the morbid sorts, pulling toys apart to see which parts they were made from. It was a curious but partially concerning hobby, at least until I realized he'd do the exact same with walkie-talkies, radios, and old televisions. He was just curious as to how things worked, and he was damn good at it. It wasn't until October this year, a few weeks before Halloween, before that all changed. At 10 years of age, he ran up to me as we were shopping, pulled my arm, and begged for me to come with him. We entered a toy store covered in fake cobwebs and hundreds of scary, tiny costumes, but none of that seemed to interest him. All he wanted to show me was a large, used doll with red hair and eyes that could penetrate one's very soul. "I want him!" Alex called out as he jumped up and down in excitement. On the box there was just a name without a description. Chucky, an oddly eerie toy with an uncomfortable aura surrounding it. The thing didn't strike me as a children's toy at all, but Alex was adamant about the fact that he absolutely needed it. And since it was a heavily discounted used toy, I couldn't deny him the treat. Since he was a child that rarely asked for new toys, and one that did well at school, I thought he'd earn something new of his own. After all, I hadn't seen him that excited, well, ever. So, despite the steep price, I purchased the creepy doll, secretly hoping he'd grow tired of it and tear it apart like he did most devices. But that would not be the case. Over the next couple of weeks, Alex would take Chucky with him wherever he went. He'd pretend to feed him, have imaginary conversations with the thing, and even tuck it into bed next to him every night. He loved the damn thing, and nothing could separate the two. Still, I felt nervous whenever I saw the doll. Its eyes were weirdly expressive, filled with malice and designed in such a way that I could have sworn they were following me around the room wherever I went. It was a feeling I just couldn't shake, one that kept growing stronger for each day passing in October. During the night, I'd hear Alex chuckle as he held pretend conversations with Chucky. Most of the time, I'd just hear his voice, but on occasion, I almost imagine hearing a second voice, a dark whisper telling Alex stories I couldn't decipher. "Who were you talking to last night?" I asked, trying to seem calm. "Chucky, of course," Alex shouted excitedly. I let out a nervous chuckle. "Do you do his voice as well?"
"No, he talks himself," Alex said back, matter-of-factly.
"What exactly does he say?"
"He told me about his old friend."
"Old friend?"
"Yeah. Where he used to live before. He didn't like him very much in the end. That's why he had to kill him."
"Kill who?"
"Chucky had to kill David Melford. He wasn't being nice to Chucky anymore."
I was rendered speechless by that last sentence. While Alex had the morbid curiosity to take toys and devices apart to see how they worked, he had never once seemed violent, nor as much as mentioned death. "Chucky killed someone?" I asked with a shaky voice.
"Only because he was mean. Chucky said I'd never be mean," Alex explained.
After that, I sat Alex down and explained to him how serious these jokes were, that no one should mess around like that. Alex nodded along, shooting quick glances over at Chucky, who sat in a chair and seemed to observe the conversation. The creepy smile he had worn upon purchase seemed to have lessened, but I convinced myself I'd remembered his facial expression wrong.
"Don't be mad at Chucky," Alex begged. "He doesn't like it when people are mad."
The conversation didn't go much further, but the name Alex had mentioned, David Melford, stuck in my mind as something beyond a child's creative imagination. Once Alex had gone to bed, taking that creepy doll with him, I started looking up local news articles. The name wasn't all that uncommon, but one particular case stood out, a missing persons case about a 10-year-old child vanishing on Halloween a year prior, and a picture of him showing him holding onto a doll exactly like Chucky. That's the moment I should have gotten rid of it.
but my logical mind refused to give in to the idea that Chucky was anything more than what he appeared, a harmless doll. Instead of getting rid of him, I kept observing Alex playing and talking to him, praying he'd get tired of the doll and toss it away. But he didn't. And for each day ticking down towards Halloween, the more Chucky appeared to change. His eyes seemed more alive, and his unnaturally large smile had turned into a frown. While his face was made of malleable material, I couldn't rest easy knowing I was sharing a house with it. On the 26th of October, I was awoken in the middle of the night by Alex standing at my bedside. "Hey, Alex, what's going on?"
"I can't sleep."
"Chucky says you're mean, and he doesn't like mean people."
"Chucky said I was mean?"
"Why?" I asked, more annoyed than anything.
"He says you looked at him strangely and want to get rid of him, and he says he won't go."
I'm not sure if it was the lack of sleep or the dread of another workday coming up, but I'd had enough of the eeriness.
"It's just a damn doll."
"Go back to bed, Alex. We'll talk about this tomorrow," I said sternly. He hesitantly returned to bed, but sleep would not come easily that night. I was thinking of ways to get rid of Chucky without upsetting Alex too much. I needed a good plan and a convincing lie, but for such an idea, I needed to sleep first. I'd awake the next morning to soaking wet bedsheets and air filled with a metallic tinge and rot. I almost threw up as I took my first morning breath. Once my eyes had adapted to the dim light, I realized that the liquid that was covering my bed was in fact blood. I jumped out from the bed in shock, desperately checking myself for wounds. But the blood wasn't mine. That's when I noticed the corpse of a stray cat lying at the foot of the bed, partially obscured by the duvet and covers, killed by multiple stab wounds. For a moment, I sat there in total panic, trying to figure out what had just happened. But my thoughts of worry quickly turned to concern for Alex. Whatever had killed the cat could have harmed my son. I jumped out of bed and rushed into his bedroom, still soaked in the stinking blood. There, Alex lay in a pool of the poor animal's blood as Chucky sat on his chair, clean as a whistle. At that moment, it all dawned on me that Alex was sick and in need of dire psychiatric help. My own son had killed the cat, and while Chucky was a creepy as hell doll, it wasn't dangerous, but rather a part of Alex's delusion. The rest of that day went by in a haze. We met up with a few doctors and psychologists who all recommended a short stay in a safe facility where he could be treated. All the while, Alex vehemently denied having killed the cat.
"It was Chucky. He was angry," he kept repeating with a shaky voice.
I ignored his pleas for help and promised that he'd be taken care of by the doctors. He cried as I left him, but not out of fear. He was upset that Chucky couldn't come with him. As I arrived home alone, tears still lingering in my eyes from the ordeal, I found Chucky sitting on the floor of the entrance, almost awaiting my arrival. In a fury of blinding rage, I took the doll, wrapped it inside several bags to make sure I never had to lay eyes upon it again, and tossed it in the trash. I'd just have to wait for the next day and watch as the garbage truck passed by and removed him from my house forever. Alas, things would not be that simple. Because as I awoke the next morning, I found the trash can toppled over and the bags torn open. Chucky was gone. For a moment, I just stood there and tried to convince myself that some neighbor kids had seen me throw the doll away and had taken it for themselves. But that theory would quickly be put to rest as I went into my garage to find the entire place torn apart. Paint buckets had been destroyed, covering the entirety of the room in red paint, alongside debris from broken furniture. In the midst of it all sat Chucky. His smile had vanished from his face, replaced by a strong frown. In a rush of panic, I just grabbed him, took him into my house, lit up the fireplace, and threw him inside. His plastic body started to melt, and for each piece of his horrid body burning to a crisp, I felt a sense of relief wash over me. Chucky was gone, and calmness once again occupied my home. Each day, I went to visit Alex in the psychiatric facility. He'd stopped asking for Chucky. Instead, he'd come up with a new delusion.
"It's okay. He's not angry at you anymore. Chucky said he will come and get me out of here soon."
Though the doctors said it was too early to tell, they comforted me, saying it's probably just an acute psychotic episode rather than schizophrenia, considering his age and all. But they needed me to be patient, because these things take time. "He'll be home soon, the same boy as before. Don't worry about it," the doctor said reassuringly. and I believed him. I went home. I relaxed, knowing Alex was in good hands. Everything seemed fine until the 31st of October, the evening of Halloween, where I got a call from the psychiatric facility. A nervous-sounding doctor said that Alex had gone missing and that the police were out looking for him. Somehow, he'd managed to evade all the security cameras, and the only thing left behind was a trace of burned plastic and rubber, but no signs of an active fire. I don't know where Alex is, or if he's even still alive. All I know is that Chucky took him. Against all odds, his body had survived the fire, and he had taken Alex, just like he had the Melford kid, and who knows how many others before him. Melford had vanished on Halloween, just like Alex, and according to news reports going as far back as the 80s, more than a dozen kids have been taken, all on Halloween. I don't know if I'll see Alex ever again, but if you see a used Chucky doll next year around October, stay away from it. Please. I never found pride in my job, collecting ancient horrific items with dark backstories. Be it movie props, strange diaries, or even haunted dolls, I seek them out and add them to my ever-growing collection of the supernatural. I don't aim to make money from this, nor do I seek fame or glory. All I want, all I've ever wanted, is to prove the existence of something beyond our own reality. So, I've traveled to every haunted location on this planet, and I've sought out any possibly possessed item, only to find myself empty-handed and disappointed time and time again. That would all change the moment I brought home a several-decades-old doll I found buried in a few boxes in an abandoned house, left and forgotten by time itself. The house itself was actually my original destination. Allegedly, the previous owner was found murdered with his jaw physically torn apart from the rest of his head. A perpetrator was never found, but according to the autopsy report, the doctor adamantly insisted that the mortal wound was self-inflicted. Since then, the house has been abandoned, left alone to the point where the roof was collapsing in on itself. It was scheduled for demolition, but I had to get a closer look before the place was lost to history. And to my surprise, it hadn't yet been looted. Most of the place was covered by mold, dust, and peeling paint, sometimes all three at once. The previous owner must have been living quite frugally, because the place held nothing more than the bare necessities required to sustain life. It wasn't until I found the dangerously unstable attic before I finally hit the jackpot. A pile of boxes filled to the brim with various mementos, pictures, notebooks, and old toys. Most of the pictures were of dolls, and the notebooks were filled with handwritten texts describing the doll's behavior. Oddly enough, none of the depicted dolls could be found among the toys, as if they'd been removed after being photographed. All except for one red-haired doll with a thick face and massive eyes. Upon inspection, I realized just how dirty the doll was. Not only was it covered in dust, but specks of dark red stains that resembled blood. On its back, it had a name tag sewn into the shirt that just read, Chucky. But whether it was the name of the doll or the owner, I couldn't tell. Not that any of that mattered. The mystery behind the dolls, the pictures, and the textbooks was all I wanted. So I grabbed as much as I could and added it all to my collection. As I got home, I started reading through the notebooks. I quickly realized that the man who'd written them wasn't much unlike myself. He had been collecting hundreds of supposedly haunted dolls and put them all through various tests to determine the validity of the claims. And the notebook described each of the tests. Julie, production year, 1954. Owner was a 5-year-old girl that died from an unexplained heart attack, reported hearing strange sounds at night shortly after receiving the doll on her birthday. Doll remains unresponsive to all tests. Bobby, production year, 1966. Custom made for a baby boy, placed in the room as a symbolic guardian during the night. Ever since its placement, the baby hasn't stopped crying. It wasn't until the doll was moved for cleaning that the crying stopped. During that time, the mother reported hearing whispers over the baby monitor. Doll remains unresponsive to all tests. Every single one of the entries ended with that same sentence. Doll remains unresponsive to all tests, all except for the last entry. Chucky's entry. Chucky, production year, unknown.
Dahl discovered at a yard sale, allegedly a part of a mass production line of similar battery-powered dolls. Despite the rumors, no copies of the doll have been found. Chucky's history remains a mystery, but his worn-out appearance indicates previous ownership. His eyes seem to follow me as I walk around the room. The battery compartment remains empty, indicating a possible optical illusion. Update, October 3rd, 1992. Chucky started becoming more active during the first days of the month. He keeps appearing in random rooms without me moving him. I've never been one to sleepwalk. I'll try locking him up tonight. Update, October 15th, 1992. I woke up to minor cuts on my arms. Chucky was in my room. Did he hurt me? Update, October 23rd, 1992. I keep hearing him whisper. I can't understand what he's saying, but I know it's time. Update, October 30th, 1992. Chucky sat at my bed. He carved letters into my chest. I can't block out his voice anymore. He says that I'll be dead on Halloween. I need to get rid of him. That was the last entry. The book was either a hoax or exactly what I'd been looking for. I did a basic inspection, checking for any power source of post-production modification. His eyes did indeed seem to follow me as I moved around, and the crimson spots were definitely not a part of its original design. Another thing that sent chills down my spine was his facial expression. At the time of discovery, he'd worn a more neutral look, but as I inspected him, he was smiling. But apart from these initial creepy findings, I couldn't confirm any real supernatural aspect. But I'd just gotten the thing, and it was getting late, so I locked him up securely within one of my safes and went to bed for the night. I don't know whether it came from excitement or if something had changed within my home, but that night, sleep would not come easy. I kept lingering on the brink of sleeping, existing somewhere between the waking world and dreams. Each time I felt myself fade away into unconsciousness, I could have sworn I heard a whisper pull me back to reality.
"Come and play,"
it said. The first few times I shot up in bed and searched the entire room for any kind of intruder. I checked my phone and computer multiple times to check if anything had accidentally started playing. And the third time I heard the whispers, I went to check on Chucky, who was still safely locked away. By the time morning came around, I'd only gotten a couple of hours of proper shut-eye, and though I wanted nothing more than to investigate the supernatural aspects of Chucky, I had to work until nightfall. As I sat in the office that day, I kept thinking back to the whispers. They had to have been a part of my overtired mind, a waking dream, but the idea alone still sent shivers down my spine. By the time day had given way to night, I arrived home half asleep. My body yearned for a good night's sleep, but I had to work with Chucky. I decided to start with the basics, testing the doll's response to various stimuli. I tried out electricity, sound, impacts, heat, cold, and measured any kind of radioactivity. Nothing. Based on the preliminary findings, Chucky was nothing more than a normal doll. Yet his eyes would not stop following me around the room, and his smile seemed to have gotten wider. I wanted to do more tests, but my eyes were getting heavy, and I was struggling to stay awake. I left my workbench, forgetting to put Chucky back into the safe, and stumbled into bed, instantly falling asleep. My dreams were uneasy that night, filled with the whispers and faint laughter, never letting me truly rest.
"Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?"
A voice whispered with intermittent chuckles. A strange burning sensation started crawling up my arms, like lines of fire climbing towards my neck. It started as a light tingle, but quickly turned to unbearable warmth that inevitably caused me to wake up in panic. I shot up in bed, my eyes quickly adapting to the dark, and what I saw sent a huge surge of adrenaline rushing through my body. Chucky was sitting at the foot of my bed, staring at me with his usual uncanny smile. Only then did I notice how warm and wet my arms felt. I glanced down at them, only to find streaks of fresh blood pouring down from dozens of deep cuts on my arms. In my right hand, I held a bloodied knife, most likely the source of my cuts.
"From now on, no more Mr. Good Guy,"
I heard Chucky whisper without moving his mouth. I jumped out of bed, which shook it enough to send Chucky pummeling to the ground, dropping his knife. Once again, He seemed to have turned into an inanimate object. I was safe. That event was enough to convince me of the supernatural, but I wasn't stupid enough to continue playing with my own life. I took the doll out into my backyard and tossed it into the woodcutter. I heard a sickly scream as the machine cut him into pieces and spat out pieces of plastic on the other end. With that, I let out a sigh of relief and went to the hospital for treatment. None of the cuts were too deep and resembled self-harm wounds more than intentionally damaging ones. Of course, I couldn't tell the doctors the truth, so I listened to them preach about mental health as they sent me home. Exhausted, I just lay in bed all day watching movies, trying to keep my mind off what I'd just experienced. The distraction paid off, because at some point in the evening, I just dozed off, falling into a dreamless sleep. Alas, the rest would not last long. I was awoken around midnight to a burning pain in my hand. I shot up in bed and screamed as I realized someone had just cut my middle finger off. In the corner of my room sat Chucky with a pair of bloodied garden shears, smiling at my suffering. What the fuck?
Yeah, life sure is full of surprises.
Chucky didn't even try to fight back as I grabbed him. That time I burned him in the yard, staring at his melting body before frantically searching for my finger, which was nowhere to be found. Only once I'd confirmed that his body had burned away did I return to the hospital for treatment. That time I had a few days of uncomfortable silence as I wondered whether Chucky would return, a question that would be brutally answered as I woke up with the skin flayed off my leg and Chucky sitting next to me on the bed. I almost died that night due to blood loss, and he'd managed to damage some of the nerves in my leg, leaving me with a permanent limp. And again, I was stupid enough to try to get rid of him. I figured destroying him couldn't work, so instead I dug a hole in the ground, tossed him in, and filled it with cement. He'd be intact, but trapped within the block of concrete. But he'd return with a vengeance not 3 days later, where I woke up to him pushing a knife into my right eye, pulling it out as he removed the knife from my now empty socket. What the hell do you want from me? I cried.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
As usual, he never resisted when I fought back. He let me push him away, and he didn't attack as I called an ambulance. Except that time, I was planning on coming home. After several visits in the month of October, several of the doctors believed I was suffering from some sort of mental disorder, and I didn't disagree. On the 29th of October, I was sent to a local psychiatric facility. They kept me locked away from the rest of mankind, making sure I didn't harm myself. Though I knew I wasn't crazy, I figured being locked in meant Chucky would be locked out. For the next couple of days, I believed I was safe. But on October 30th, the whisper began again.
Hi, I'm Chucky, and I'm your friend to the end.
Chucky said in the dead of night. Leave me alone, I cried. He whispered back. Today is Halloween, the day the previous owner allegedly died. I've tried to warn the staff here, but they just upped my dosage of antipsychotics. I am going to die tonight, and there's nothing in this world that can save me. So I'm writing this last letter as a warning. Don't try to prove the existence of something supernatural. And if you ever see a Chucky doll for sale, ignore it.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.